Welcome into ESPN FC Daily, K-Marie and LME. What a glorious victory for Morocco. Their first World Cup victory since 1998. Goals from super subs Sabiri and Aboukhlel. 2-0 against Belgium, this golden generation of Belgium. Your thoughts on what we've just seen, Luis?
Kate Murray, unbelievable. Morocco, as you said, such a historic victory. Incredible to see what they just did. This tournament continues to surprise us, especially from those three, four teams in every group. How after losing in match day one, they just become resilient and win once again. And Belgium, Kate Murray, Belgium are like, you know, in Saving Private Ryan when at the very end, when what's his name is looking at himself and he's just aging and aging and aging. The golden generation of Belgium is slowly, slowly realizing their own mortality. It's unbelievable.
I know. Let me tell you this. If for some reason, somehow, Kevin De Bruyne gets man of the match after this game again, I think he himself will say, you can stick this where the sun don't shine. I mean, Morocco completely worthy of this win today. And fun to watch too. It's been brilliant to see them play. I love that they were taking their chances when they with the free kicks, because obviously they'd had the ball in the net and the goal wasn't allowed. I just feel that watching that after that moment as well, it felt like it was all going their way. Belgium were just not showing me anything that convinced me that they were going to come through and win this game.
Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable. And we all saw it coming. Kevin De Bruyne himself has said it. He said, look, I don't see us winning this thing. And I'm like, winning this thing? I don't know if you can get out of this thing anymore. And I was thinking of Matt Damon, by the way, in Saving Private Ryan when he's aging.
Matt Damon. Oh, just Matt Damon. Just a small-known Matt Damon. It is interesting that Kevin De Bruyne has said that because this obviously before the game, and there's been a question as to whether that was a motivation tactic or frustration talking.
I don't think so, okay. I think he's just very honest. And he's like,
I think he's very honest for one, like even in saying, I don't know why I got this man of the match award after that first game. Exactly. I think he's very honest. And I think there's another part of it where it's also deflecting people as if to say, can you stop putting this pressure, not even pressure, can you stop putting this attention on us? Like we're someone who's expected to go further than we do, because maybe he knows a lot more. We're seeing what they've got to offer at the moment, and it's not too convincing. They were lucky, let's say, in that first game as well, because even Roberto Martinez had said Canada were the better side in this game. He felt that the team deserved to win, and obviously he's not going to say too much different to that about his own team. Yeah. But very lackluster, might
very lackluster. I think that's the perfect way to describe the Belgians right now. And by the way, it points to something that we talked about before the tournament began, which is, you know, some of the things that we talked about, you know, this is the difference between the top contenders or who you thought were the top contenders and the three and four teams in every group. The margin is at its thinnest it's ever been. And you can clearly see that. Like, you can have a horrible game in match day one and kind of pick yourself up again. Australia have shown it. Costa Rica have shown it. Morocco, who are very good within themselves, specifically in Africa, have shown it again. And Belgium, I don't know, okay, Mari, I'm not sure, but I don't know what's going to happen next. All I'm saying is Canada-Croatia should be a cracker.
Yeah, oh, we have a goalkeeper here. Can I make my goalkeeper joke, Shaka? Because we saw Bono when the anthems came up, and then it turned out he had an eye injury, so it turns out he really still hadn't found what he was looking for.
Very good.
Morocco, hey?
incredible and deserving, as both you and LME have been saying. Listen, there are a lot of question marks about Belgium. I felt as much coming into the tournament. You saw that against Canada. You saw that even more pointedly today. But give credit where it's due. Morocco, I thought, were outstanding. Given the way this group is set up, given that performance, I mean, it really leaves you looking forward to what else this group and this tournament has to offer. Because, as we've been saying, just when you thought after one match day for everybody, things were a little bit crazy, all of a sudden, after two games, it's shaping up to be even more so.
Yeah, Shaka, it's like Al Pacino and The Godfather. Just when you think I'm out, they pull me back in. That's exactly what's happening in this
You need to stop watching all those old movies, LME.
I know. I need to actually get
not every football game has got a movie parallel.
I know. I have no life.
He could find it. We could find it probably here on ESPN FC Daily. Oh, God.
Let's settle this once and for all to both of you. Shaka, first you. Is the golden generation of Belgium done? Is this it?
Oh yes. It's been done for quite some time, in all honesty. Listen, everybody was hinging on Belgium's number one world ranking, which it enjoyed for quite some time, for far too long, in my opinion. Having not won anything, I'm not sure what they've done to deserve that, particularly for as long as they did. But then coming into this tournament, you've got Eden Hazard, who's had his injury problems, not being the player that he once was for club, and dare I say, also now for country. As good as Kevin De Bruyne is, he is an assist maker. He needs that support to the front of him. Lukaku coming into the tournament with injuries, they figured he'd probably play a bigger role in the group stages if Belgium are to get to those group stages. And Michy Batshuayi is not the player that takes you deep into a World Cup. He may get you out of a group stage, and that's me with inverted commas given this result. But he's not going to get you that deep. So that golden generation everybody been looking for or hoping to see a lot of, I think is done. And just to put things in perfect perspective, coming into this tournament, the expectation was that Belgium would play with a back three. Aging 33, 35, and 19.
Yeah.
Today, 33, 35, and 31.
Yeah.
The math says a back three that ages 99. It seems almost cliched, but it sums up Belgium's deficiencies, not just defensively, but throughout the park.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go with it, Checker, because I feel that when we talk about Belgium and this golden generation, even going back a few years now, we'd say, oh, but that defence. But when you're not putting the ball in the back of the net either, when you've got players like Hazard who aren't the player they were mm-hmm. once more, we see an injured Lukaku, then it's not just in defence either, is it? You know, they've got Courtois behind them, thank goodness. But when you're seeing that, and it used to always be that we were just bringing up the defence, and it obviously still is a concern, as you say, but suddenly all these attacking players that look so mm-hmm. strong on paper, names that we all know, household names in football fans' lifetime, this is not anything that you can get too excited about. And now I think we can say this is a team that aren't putting the ball away like we'd expect them to, on top of those defensive issues.
Yeah, and in defense of Belgium's defense, let me just say, I've seen Alderweireld and Vertonghen pretty much throughout their careers. I remember them as a centre-back pairing for Ajax, and they were at their best, two of the best central defenders in the world game. Let's give them that credit. But Father Time's undefeated, and at 33 and 35, it doesn't matter how good you once were, at this level of the game, you're going to be found wanting. So while at their best, Belgium had arguably one of the best centre-back pairings in world football. While at their best, Belgium had one of the most lethal attacks in world football. Lukaku, Eden Hazard, Kevin De Bruyne. Even then, they couldn't get further than the semi-final. They couldn't get themselves into the final of a major international tournament. So I'm not sure why some 4 years later we expected anything more.
Yeah.
Tom Hamilton joining the party here.
Well, Tom Hamilton has some good perspective on Michy Batshuayi. Isn't that right, Tom?
Well, yeah, he's useless. So I don't really get like what you expect in that scenario, really. I think it's just... it's so strange watching this team. I don't really think it should come as a surprise, as we've said, because look at Eden Hazard and Thorgan this season. Between them, in their respective leagues, 0 goals, 0 assists. Yeah. What are you expecting? These players aren't in form. Look at Charles de Cattolari, this young midfielder, who is completely brilliant, but is still settling into life at AC Milan. Like, you've got all these players who are sort of between one club and another. You've got Lukaku, who's so important for Belgium, who's got this really untimely injury. And suddenly, once you start picking apart the team a little bit, they're frayed at the edges and it just doesn't click. And so for so long, we saw this, you know, the golden generation coming together. But at the moment, it's just not clicking at all. And they're not giving enough sort of trust to the young guys. Like, you've got Doku on the bench, you've got these players. I mean, why pick them? I mean, the weird thing is, Origi, not even in the squad. I'd have had him over Batshuayi today. 100%.
Yeah, 100%. Why don't you like Batshuayi? If you look at his goal return, though, for Belgium, it's really good. What don't you like about him? He did score in that first game as well.
Yeah, I've perhaps been a bit too harsh and got a bit too excited. But...
I think Tom's point is valid because of everything that we've been talking about. The problem is like, and actually, I think we can connect this to something that I do want to address, is Roberto Martinez, who, you know, a fine person, a good manager. But I truly believe that Roberto Martinez is at his best when he manages, you know, the likes of Wigan or whatever, a team that needs to be built, a team that needs to be developed, a team that needs to continue to grow. Belgium, I don't think, you know, and for everything that he did in 2018, and obviously with that talent, you have to do something. But I think that Belgium reached a certain ceiling with him years ago. Canada exposed it and Morocco exposed it again. Now, Batshuayi's issue is that he doesn't fit that perspective and strategy that Roberto Martinez wants to do. It really is Lukaku, but to Xhaka's point, you know, he's not 100%, so he couldn't do that. So what do you do? You really need to now pay attention to what's happening right now, right? If Tom Hamilton's talking about the Hazard brothers not delivering, well, who is delivering? Leandro Trossard. Why don't you start him from the get-go? He's feeling good. He's confident. He's mobile, right? And then at the very least, you can create some kind of reaction to this very pacey, this very dynamic Moroccan side. So there was, as much as we want to talk about, you know, the degeneration, the going away, the sort of facade of the golden generation, that it's clearly going away. We also have to talk about the fact that, did Roberto Martinez get it right today? Was that really the starting 11 that you think we're going to do something, especially after what you saw against Canada?
And I think your underlying point there, Luis, I think what you're actually saying is time's up on Roberto Martinez as Belgian manager, right? Would you agree with that?
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, I would. Listen, I think given the feelings of the Belgian golden generation, I don't see how you defend Roberto Martinez's record at international level. And I thought a few weeks ago we had Vincent Kompany on ESPN FC doing an interview with Gab, or was it Jules?
They're one and the same person now.
Remember, but something he said stuck with me in defense of Belgium's golden generation and as a result of Roberto Martinez. He said, well, the best team doesn't always win the World Cup. And I found that such a strange thing to say. And my response to that was, well, what does that mean? What does that mean exactly? Mm. You dismiss, you kind of accept a FIFA ranking of the top nation in the world, but then dismiss it all by, well, the best team doesn't win. And I find that so empty. And maybe it is Vincent Kompany just being a former international, being a coach himself, not wanting to be too disparaging around many players that he knows. You know, we've all kind of been there where it's somebody we know and know well, and we don't want to be overly critical. But in the end, you can't just offer something as empty as, well, the best team doesn't always win, because that serves absolutely no one in trying to better Belgium.
He's kind of insulting his own team, Xhaka, isn't he?
It really is.
Tom, do you want to add a further point on Belgium?
I just think it's a huge shame that we're going to see a player like Kevin De Bruyne probably finish without a major international trophy. I think, like, he's been one of the best players in the world for the last decade. And we've seen other generations come and go, the likes of Vincent Kompany, who sort of define Belgian football. It's going to be so interesting to see where they are in 8 years' time. There's enough sort of football knowledge and enough football nous within this group to really make something remarkable, like, for the next generation. And they've just got to give them opportunity. And I think there's going to be a really stark finish between one generation and the next. I think you're going to see, we talked about the age of the defence, you're going to see them suddenly probably slip into, like, the international wilderness, and we're going to see other players slow down. And suddenly you're going to have these guys with 70, 80 caps, leaving it to people with far fewer. And there's going to be a really big sort of dividing line between the two. It was nice to see Anana start today. I think he's a brilliant player. And, you know,
very good.
But still, there's a lot of players out of form. And going back, I was too harsh on Batshuayi earlier, but what it does suggest is that I'm rowing back now. But it does, you know, he can't, like Lukaku so often has been the guy who kind of takes the game by the scruff of the neck, and Batshuayi needs someone like that alongside him to help play it in, and he just can't have the same effect. So it's, you know, at the moment, they've just got pretty ordinary.
I think, Tom, you're right. I think the key there is Batshuayi is a player who comes in alongside somebody else.
Yeah,
to make a two-pronged attack, as it were. But he's not one to lead the line with. And again, listen, I understand taking Romelu Lukaku with the hopes that he's fit and firing in time for the group, in time for the knockout stage. And at that point, if you do fall, I can't remember how the grid plays out, but if you fall behind in one of those knockout games against whoever it is, and you can bring Batshuayi on when you need a goal, that makes total sense. But you know, I don't think that there was that kind of plan A almost in terms of getting out of the group stage and overcoming what Belgium have in front of them. But at the same time, I need to say I think, as much as we're right to criticize Belgium, we also have to give Morocco their praise.
Yeah, that's where I was going, Shaka.
Players like Ziyech, who've been frustrated at Chelsea, incredibly talented. I also think that there's huge value to where this tournament is being held in the Middle East. And I know Moroccan or African, but North Africa, and falls into that general catchment area. And there's a lot of expectation around teams like Morocco in this World Cup in particular, and a lot of unknowns for them. And whenever we talk about World Cups, and the beauty of World Cups for me is, while yes, come the end of the tournament, a lot of the focus will be on the winners and some of the bigger nations who you expect to be there, especially at this stage of the tournament, some of these smaller, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to Morocco, certainly not in this circumstance, but some of these nations where they're less focused on, and how much it means to those players to be playing on this stage, how much it means to those fans, and you see how many Moroccans showed up today, to see their countries on this stage representing, putting noses out of joint, means more, or means as much to this small group of fans as it does to some of the larger nations who will go on to win semi-finals and maybe even win the final. Yeah. And I think that, for me, while we have the opportunity, we need to be enjoy and certainly relish.
The first time an African team has defeated Belgium at the World Cup. Mm.
Yeah, Belgium did have a good record against CAF sides. So big props to Morocco. Now, Tom Hamilton, you don't have to worry that you backtracked a little bit, because yours was a really mild backtrack and totally forgivable. It wasn't like a backtrack of choosing one side to win the whole World Cup and then suddenly seeing the first game and deciding, actually, no, I'm not going for Argentina to win the World Cup. But now that we get a chance to check back in with the man who did that, Shaka Hislop, I wonder if
somebody was calling me.
Shaka, didn't hear you, Kate.
I was being someone's over there. I was being someone's. I'm not sure what's. What? Huh? I didn't hear one thing you said, Kate. Let me just say, I am allowed to change my mind every 2 days.
So are you ESPN back from contract. Argentina winning it after Messi's heroics?
Nope. No, I'm sticking with Brazil. One, because I was less than 2 days ago, so I can't change my mind just yet. But to my initial change of mind, even though Argentina got the better of Mexico yesterday, Lionel Messi again writing all the headlines, I'm not convinced about Argentina. And my thing with them, in regards to the Saudi Arabia game, is, from the time an opponent posed a threat that they weren't expecting, there was nobody who was able to make the change on the park, and in Lionel Scaloni, nobody able to make the adjustments off it. Now, While yes, we can salivate over the Argentina performance and Messi's goal really was something special, I have more questions about Tata Martino and Mexico. After you watch Renault and Saudi Arabia press the living daylights out of Argentina, make sure that there's somebody always within 2 yards of Lionel Messi, why do you decide, you know what's going to work for me here? I'm going to put 5 at the back, not ask my wing backs to overlap, and sit right on top of my box all game long. It was an absolutely ridiculous approach to take by, we had Sebastian Salazar on FC last night, by the 6th highest paid coach at this World Cup. It was simply beyond belief in my opinion. But they got, Argentina got their just reward. They were fully deserving of the 3 points. Again, Lionel Messi being allowed to weave his magic, and that was telling. But if against better opposition, who press better than Mexico ever could, who keep somebody in very close proximity and limits Lionel Messi's impact, I'm not sure that anybody else in Argentina is able to step up to that point. And Lionel Messi said something after the first game, that he felt that the starting lineup was a little bit too young. And I'm not sure I agree with that. It was not a young starting lineup. You had two players aged 24, everybody else 25 and above. And to that point, it was Fernandez coming off the bench for Argentina, 21 years old, who did something that nobody other than Lionel Messi did in 180 minutes plus all the injury time for Argentina. Gets the ball, steps up, and takes the responsibility on his own shoulders. And I thought that was breathtaking. That was good to witness from an Argentina perspective.
Yeah, just to quickly wrap the Argentina-Mexico situation and all the good points that Shaka just said. First of all, I have three. One, the Mexican national team and Mexican fans for a long time now have understood that preparing for this World Cup, this is one of the, if not the weakest Mexican team in modern history coming into this World Cup, whether it's because of development, recruitment, or the talent that was available. You know, long gone are the days of Chicharito and Carlos Vela, Raul Jimenez, it wasn't 100%. Henry Martin was not a popular figure. So Tata Martino, already a very unpopular figure for the Mexican team, who really were not scoring that many goals, A, in qualifiers, and B, heading into the World Cup. They were worried, right? So the first 45 minutes, I actually thought was a good plan for Mexico. You were frustrating an Argentina side that you knew had everything at their disposal. They tried to congest the midfield. Alexis Vegas looked like he had three lungs, was killing himself for this match, right? But little by little, you know, Scaloni at halftime or after that said, I need to really change this. So 5 substitutions and many multiple changes. Here's the thing, and my second point, which is more for Argentina right now, which is why I don't see them as favorites to win this whole thing. They are a team. They're not a squad. And the problem with Argentina right now is that yesterday's victory was defined by individual brilliance, not by collective will. And when you meet a team, a true team, a France, right, or a Spain, Brazil, which they should, if they top their group and Brazil top theirs in the semifinals, they're going to find themselves in big, big trouble. And the third thing that I want to say is Enzo Fernandez, he is ridiculous. I've known it for a while, and his stock just went up, baby.
Tom, what are your thoughts on Argentina and Messi's heroics?
Yeah, I completely agree. The thing I was going to say is that it's individual brilliance which saw them through. So obviously you need, you know, players in positions, putting defenders out of place, etc. But it was a brilliant strike for Messi and Fernandez coming on and doing what he did. I think the real concern for them must be how to get the best out of Lautaro Martinez, because so far he's just not firing at all, which is a huge concern. They brought on Julian Alvarez and he did well, but again, it's these individual moments which are seeing them through. And they really, we haven't seen like the fluid style of football, the collective, which we associate with Argentina, which led to their ridiculously long winning run. But they're definitely not quite clicking. And when you have Messi in the team, okay, you're going to stand a chance to beat anybody in the world, but they can only rely on that for so long. and in so many games, they have to start clicking if they're to live up to the sort of the status as pre-tournament favourites.
Given that it was Lionel Messi who obviously set them on course for victory, I just wanted to bring up a few of the points that were said after the game and also his mindset as well, because we were talking yesterday about how this could be a turning point for Argentina. And he said himself, the group is ready. We've taken a very important step. Now we have to take another. But they asked Di Maria whether he was claiming an assist on that goal. And he said, what? I threw him a turd, but he always finds solutions to everything. And that was really funny. But what was also great was the guys revealed that Di Maria and Messi had actually spoken before, and Messi had noticed that their opponents were dropping deep and narrow inside. And so he knew that space in front of them was going to open up. So he told Di Maria about this, and he told Di Maria to wait for that moment for that to happen. And he said, when it does, get that ball to me and I'll make sure I do something with it. And he did. So even if it is a turd that's sent to him, it is Messi who can turn it around. And it was a precious turd.
It was an important turd.
Yeah, he polished it very well. Anyway, Di Maria said, for me, Leo is everything. But it still does add to the individual brilliance that we're talking about in this side. And if that is the case, and we're saying that it's not enough, people have to give Messi a break. Those who are saying, oh, Messi should be the one that carries them through it. He's so good, he should be able to do that alone. No, that can't happen, guys. You need the whole team to be working.
Messi dependencia cannot exist. No.
All right, let's talk about Cristiano Ronaldo, because we talked about Lionel Messi, so we're going to have to do that. So we've got Portugal against Uruguay coming up tomorrow. Thoughts on Cristiano Ronaldo then, Tom, because there's been so much talk about him after the first game. There's been people saying, oh, he did great. Other people saying, oh, he didn't do so great. What are your thoughts on what we've seen from Cristiano so far?
Well, it's been peak Cristiano, hasn't it, really? I mean, it's the whole narrative is revolved around him, whether he wanted it to or not. I think, you know what, he was okay in the opening game. But is he, you know, in the right sort of form where they can guarantee him to produce the moments, you know, in the big games? I'm not sure, to be honest. I think if you look elsewhere in that team, you've got the likes of, you know, Felix, these sort of players as well. They need to have their chance to shine in this team as well. I think there are some sort of murmurings within the sort of the Portugal press group that they may start Ronaldo on the bench tomorrow and bring him on as an impact sub. I can't see that. I mean, it's Cristiano. He's going to end up starting. But when you have a player like Rafael Leão on the bench, surely he has to get the chance to play from the outset. And he can only do that when he's sort of out of Ronaldo's shadow. So it's going to be fascinating to see how they manage the next two group games. They've had the win. It was nervy against Ghana. You know, that they could have drawn it late on, especially if Iñaki Williams had managed to get the ball back. But it's going to be really, really interesting to see how they manage this over the next few days. I think Cristiano needs a good game. We don't want him to end up doing another interview, do we, if he's dropped? But we'll wait and see what happens. I just think that they've got some brilliant players, and I think we're forgetting that perhaps because of the whole Cristiano circus. You look at, you know, they've got Bruno Fernandes, they've got Leao, they've got Felix, etc. But it's a big game for them tomorrow. Like Uruguay didn't look overly impressive in their opener, only one shot on target against South Korea. So it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, and they beat them, didn't they? Uruguay beat Portugal in 2018. Fernando Santos has been talking about the importance of Cristiano Ronaldo, so I would hazard a guess he's going to be in the starting 11 again for him. What are your guesses, Shaka, on to which side will go further from what we've seen with Messi and his Argentina team and Ronaldo and his Portugal team?
That's a really good question, in all honesty. I'm with Tom in that. I actually thought that Portugal looked better without Ronaldo. And I know he opened the scoring, and I know the role he played in winning that penalty, which we've spoken about. But as we've also spoken about, I thought before that he had two gilt-edged opportunities to open the scoring. And if you see that in your Fernando Santos, do you ask yourself, is it better to have a Rafael Leao on the end of those crosses, on the end of those passes? And that's a decision that I'm not sure he's prepared to answer, not during this tournament, not given everything that's happened with Cristiano Ronaldo over recent weeks. You probably try to continue to appease him as best you can, at least in keeping a settled dressing room for the time being. But as I mentioned, as much as I may not be that convinced by by Portugal. Equally, I'm not that convinced by Argentina. Messi is probably, his powers have remained far stronger than, you know, Messi's. Messi's powers have remained stronger than Ronaldo's. So on if that were my yardstick, I would have to say Argentina. But really, it's about how both those players, supporting casts, can get the best out of them. How well Portugal can continue to service Cristiano Ronaldo, do his running, do the covering for him, and hope that he steps up and winning a penalty or scoring a free kick or whatever it may be, and how best Argentina's own supporting cast can try to remember that they are actually good players and are fully allowed to do and take some responsibility on their own shoulders. If Argentina players do that, I think they go further than Portugal.
Yeah, I've said too much about Argentina, so I'll just put the focus on Portugal here. And I guess I'm just going to stick with what I've said for a while, which is I believe Portugal's biggest enemy, most often than not, is actually Fernando Santos himself. I feel like sometimes there's a little bit too much of a tunnel vision with him. But, Portugal's opponent, Uruguay, I've been very high on them for a long time. I actually still have them, crazily enough, in the semifinals, just because of everything that I've seen since Diego Alonso took over from Oscar Tavares. And what you saw of Uruguay against South Korea, all due respect to South Korea, very good team, I actually was very disappointed. I expect a much, much better performance from Uruguay in this game against Portugal. I've been very high on their midfield, specifically the man that does it all, Fede Valverde. And I believe that he and others are going to pick themselves up even more against this game. I think that Uruguay are Portugal's worst possible opponent, because Uruguay are going to be in your face and make you play narrow. And Ronaldo, even though Diego Godin is still getting old, I think that this Uruguayan side will be more than enough to beat Portugal. And here come the Ronaldo haters on my Instagram DMing. I know it's going to come, but I'm just saying it right now. I have Uruguay winning this game. I believe there's so much more to them that the world hasn't seen yet.
LME,
as
far as Uruguay going to the semi-finals, you're allowed to change your mind if you like.
Is it in my contract too, Shaka?
Yeah, Kay sure. Loves it. She never mentions it when you change your mind. Never does.
Because Kay and I have this special like friendship. It's fine.
Shaka, don't try to deflect what happened onto me. You're the one who changed your mind. Tom thought he'd get away with it today. Luckily, he was in good company. Tom actually apologized for it. I don't feel like you did,
well,
Shaka.
Tom's about to get heat from Batsuai's family after this.
We'll see how many of those there are. All right, guys, thank you so much for being with us, Tom and Shaka. I will speak to you guys again later. We'll let you get to watching the next slate of games. Luis, I'll stick around with you, though, because we're going to talk about the big one that is coming up, Spain and Germany. A little later on, suddenly things are looking a bit better than they were for Germany after Japan were beaten by Costa Rica this morning.
Unbelievable. I mean, nobody saw it coming. Fantastic from Costa Rica. Resilient, strong, defiant, because it's not easy, is it, Kay? When you lose, when you get humiliated by Spain, what are you going to do next? And well done, Costa Rica. You did something truly amazing, because I did not see you getting any points in this World Cup, and you made it happen. And to your point, now this group is wide open, and Germany should be sending, you know, all the Brutwurst and all the beer to Costa Ricans, because like this really saved them, because now they have a passage. I do feel, though, okay, that Spain are going to be just a little bit too much for the Germans. I think that they're more than together. And Kay, you and I and many, many are very big fans of Luis Enrique as well, and what he's done for this team. It's just a tremendous, tremendous achievement, and as a person, as a manager, and it's going to be a good game. I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
I feel like it's made it more interesting now, and I'm wondering if it's put a bit of a spring in the step for Germany. But I just feel that given recent history between the two sides as well and in major tournaments, I feel that, I don't know, Germany almost don't seem to, like we were talking the other day about how we don't fear them like we used to fear them. Anybody doesn't. Mm. They don't seem that machine of a team that would always get the win, whatever else happened. I mean, there are quotes about it from English players historically going back. Whereas when this Spanish team comes onto the pitch, they just seem to have this swagger about them. And it's the way that Luis Enrique's got them playing, the way that they all feel so supported by him, and what we've continually mentioned, in that he doesn't care if you're playing for your side, how well you're doing for your side. If you fit his system, you fit in with him. And that makes a team feel so valued, because nobody's thinking that they're better than anyone else. You just know that he really, truly wants you, because he sees who you are as a player and that you are what he needs. So I feel like they'll run through a wall for him as well. Yeah. I know you and I both think that Spain are going to win this, or at least we said so tomorrow, so I won't backtrack on that. I'm just wondering if Germany now have seen a way of going, okay, how it will work for them. Whether it, backs were really against the wall before this morning's result, where they had to win. Now, yeah, because they have that lifeline, do they just say, okay, we've just been given this, let's make sure we definitely get something from this, without the added pressure of absolutely having to win? I can't tell what way it will play for them. So I'm still going to go for a Spain win after all.
Yeah, me too. Me too. By the way, speaking so much of Luis Enrique, people need to know that, like you said, players will do anything for him, but so would anybody that you know, crosses his path. And we know everything that he's done already. Like, he started his streaming channel on Twitch so he can really, you know, grab all that attention, all that focus from the players and make it on himself. He's very honest. He said he's open. And he's a man that has gone through the worst of tragedies, losing his beautiful daughter, Zana, in 2019 to bone cancer. This is a type of cancer that my own mother passed away from. And, you know, so I have this weird close connection to him. But today, on this day, on Instagram, he was, he's a big cyclist. He obviously noted to the importance of this match against Germany, but it's also the anniversary of his daughter would have turned 13 today. Okay. So he's paying tribute. Yeah. So obviously it's very emotional. I was reading it and just cried right there on the spot. It's, you know, he's just a very, very special human. And you know, for anybody that knows how this disgusting, horrible, demonic disease can do to a family, it's just great to see such a strong person. And I know that the entire Spanish team and Spain is right behind him.
Yeah, and him speaking out hopefully will help others like yourself as well, Luis, families who, myself too, who've been affected by cancer. We're thinking of all of you today, and we really hope you do enjoy the games that are remaining. We will be back with you after Spain against Germany.